Les colloques du Collège de France.
So in principle, I shouldn't talk because my time is over, looking at the schedule. And so in the interest of your gut neurons, I try to be short. And I have been helped because of the talks that have been given yesterday and today, which I would describe as an aesthetic experience more than a learning experience. They're really beautiful. And this is reason enough to thank Stan for what he did, even in the short time scale, without looking at the long one. Now, this is work that has had a lot of collaborators, some of whom are here, so I'm happy to talk about them. And we know that we are here because of Stan's birthday, so I started thinking about giving him a present, and I know he's so fond of tarte avec citron et meringue, no? So I tried to go with tarts, and I asked the best friend of people now in the world, so ChatGPT, to just generate cakes. But I was unable to just get cakes with 60 candles. This is a 42 cakes, candle cakes. This is Gemini with 48. We tried many times. So I was unable to just get a good cake for him. I tried to ask Claude, and Claude does something different, because what Claude generates is... I'm not used to use... Okay, is this thing, like a lot of code, okay? And in fact, if you realize this code, that's what you find. There are 60 candles here. The cake is not particularly appealing, but it does have 60 candles. And I'm not going to give you this cake. I have another present for you. But the point illustrates very well one issue that is also connected with an anniversary that you didn't remember, which is this one. In 50 years ago, exactly 50 years ago, the Language of Thought book came out. And this was the spirit of the time. I mean, Fodor had this incredible ability to just pick issues that were just ripe and make them clear. And that is sort of what there was in the book. It was the spirit of the time, because I had the pleasure to host some of you in my house, and this is exactly a picture that is taken in front of my house, and you can see that just 1 year before, there was already a bar Language of Thought just in front of my house. It means that, you know, it was really very, very important that the time was coming. All right, now I think it's instructive to look at the book and figure out what there was in the book, and you see that what Fodor was struggling with a lot were issues about philosophy, really, like justifying why there should be a language of thought, why this is not really compatible with certain kind of philosophical theories which were very popular close to that time, logical behavior and so on. And then there was a part which was empirical, and the part empirical was some of the reason for the language of thought was coming from linguistics, and some was coming from the psychology of the time. And let's take a look at the questions to understand the progress of the language of thought from there to now. So one question which is very important, and Justin's talk just nailed it down, is he was struggling very much with finding how you can distinguish in the mind concepts which are completely extensionally equivalent. And the reason is that what is really important to understand is not, I mean, the reference relation in itself, not that we learn concepts in terms of knowing something in the world, but the mechanism by which we generate a representation of a concept that could be so fine as to distinguish whether kill involves tokening like cause to die. And his answer was, in this case, no. So the question that he was is, can we distinguish in the mind expressions which are really completely identical? Can the order of acquisition of this expression can tell us something about, vice versa, can the structure of the expression can tell us something about the order? So for example, here is one quote, if only, because I'm hoping to try to talk about only, is only is defined in terms of all, we would expect all to be learned before only, which in fact it is, and it turns out to be false, but that's not important. The important point is that he was trying to just, you know, narrow down the psycholinguistic at the time with this idea of how concepts are learned. And if you look at the psychology evidence of the time, which was also mostly psycholinguistics, There is an interesting claim that he made, and I reported here because of the title of my talk, is that the claim I want to argue for, the main claim is, it is probably a mistake to talk of the system of internal representations that the organisms have available for the analysis of environmental events or behavioral options. Rather, in the general case, organisms that have access to a variety of types and levels of representation. So what he was proposing is that if you want to understand the mind, you need to understand the language of thought, and there is not one language of thought. And that's what brings me here, because I think that close to a couple of people who are not here, everybody who is interested in language of thought as a psychological and neuropsychological now theory is in the room. And so I think that the main moves that have been made, again, by Stan and his collaborators here are the right moves. And there are these moves of not finding the general language of thought, but finding some specific languages of thought, arguing for them in the so close detail as to find out what really happens in the mind, as opposed to just giving extensional description of what happens. So he's at the level of what philosophers would call intentional, with the S, description. And also, one other point that Jerry Fodor makes, and Stan makes explicitly, is you really need to understand it in terms of the human singularity, because there are many languages of thought, but there are also many animal languages of thought. That is actually his main argument why language of thought does not require natural language, because animals have languages of thought. Right? And all of it, you can find it in these fantastic papers. I'm not going to talk about them because these people will talk tomorrow by Stan's collaborator, this idea that you find shapes which are like intuitively clearer than others, and this kind of idea that we just draw a line in simple points according to how you draw these lines, how you are required to draw this line, how to continue this line, you can actually explain a complete language of thought. And that has been taken seriously by using primitives, rules of composition, and finding the coding correlates in the brain of when these rules are being used and how. Okay, so I think that this is just exactly the best that you can imagine. So this is why the state of the language of thought hypothesis is my title. The best. The state of the art is here, and I would characterize the results that were proposed here in this way. I think that I'm not betraying any of this work by saying that, first of all, human represents situation, events, and objects in a format that is different from those of other primates, and there are local language of thoughts that underline their abilities. This is essentially what has been developed here. Now, if you go back and you look at infants, because of many studies, most of which have been done by people who are here, I think we can conclude also this, that infants can, Lisa Feigenson's talk, can conceive and test explanation for violated expectations, for physical as well as psychological events, which means they can represent hypotheses, and this is the word that I'm interested in because it's controversial, they can represent alternatives, and they decide between alternatives, and they also have another ability, which is not only to just represent and test, but also monitor the state of other people's knowledge, as well as their own knowledge. And they can adapt the tools to find the discovery to how they consider the state of knowledge to be. I'm going to go back on these things. But the question, I mean, this is there to show you that there must be some, very likely there is some language of thought also very early on in cognition. So what we try to do in my laboratory, for lack of fantasy, for obsession, or also because I think that this is the right way to do it too, is to just take one of the issues that can be raised, how you represent alternative situation, and going obsessively looking at potential ways in which alternative situations are being represented. And we picked one kind of case, which is the simplest we could think, but it's also very rich in itself, and it comes mostly from the work of Justin Alberta, work that he did with adults and children. So we have this ability to suppose, this ability to represent hypotheses, and to knock down some of them to get to conclusion. And all of these reasonings have to have two moments, which are different in a language of thought. The moment of which called the representation, the logical form moment, what is the form by which we state the hypothesis that we need to test, And then, in the case of reasoning, also a certain kind of other information that allows you to draw an inference. And we try to find ways in which we can find moments in which infants represent certain situations and moments in which infants can draw an inference. Now, this is coming for this kind of studies in which we have drawn different kind of design, which have the same kind of structure. The top part of them is the same, so that in certain conditions you cannot know what there is in a container. Okay? Now, the cannot know for me is important because if I have to put my bet on where the human singularity is in the representation of what we do not know, not in the representation of what we know. It is in this ability. So animals see the fire and they run away. Humans see fire and they learn how to make pasta. So that is really what I'm trying to find out, how we infants represent something that they do not know. All right, so this is a structure of what I'm going to present you. There is a scene that has, in certain condition, in this condition, an object that is unknown, or in another condition, an object that is same at a certain point but is known. And we call this the logical representation moment, and the question that I want to raise is what is this representation? It can be represented as this is unknown versus a known object, or this is an A or B versus an A object. And then there is a moment in which there is disambiguating information. There's a little moment in which there is a little object coming out. And if you are in a position of not knowing what object is inside, that should be sufficient for you to draw an inference and find out the identity of the object. Okay? We try to find ways in which you can distinguish these two moments and find correlates, behavioral correlates, especially oculomotor correlates of these data. And this is work that mostly comes from Nicolò Cesana and Anna Martins, who is here. It's just a part of the work that they have done. And you can see that if you look at the pupil dilation in the moment in which there must be something which is unknown that is being represented, there is always a higher pupil dilation with respect to the very same stimulus when the object is known. And this is true in adults, in 12-month-old infants. And the same kind of phenomenon you find in the inference moment, in the moment in which you can draw an inference, you find higher pupil dilation both in adults and in infants when the conclusion about the object in the cup can be driven. I want to say that this is not, it's not important that you see the scene as they are. This is work that we are doing to just try to do neuropsychological experiments. And if you represent the scene in this way, and then you ask, okay, what is the card on the right or on the left? Or you present the scene in this way, oops, sorry, where you are asking, what is the card on the top? And you have this very moment, which lasts 1 second, sort of 1 second, to figure out what is the card on the top. Then we find the same kind of oculomotor profile. There is a higher pupil, this is an adult for the moment, a higher pupil dilation in the moment of the representation of the unknown and in the moment of the inference. All right, now the point is that how do you represent these things? You can imagine that, and this is connected to this idea that if you want to just spell out what the language of thought is, you need to be able to distinguish different, though equivalent, extensionally, ways to represent information. So you can say, you can represent this as with a disjunction or with a quantifier. There is an A or a B, I don't know which one, or there is an X. So this is variables versus constant. But you can also represent it as thinking about possible states of affairs, so a modal kind of representation. And the question that we are trying to find out is, to begin with, is do infants have these different ways of representing available, and then whether we can distinguish between them. Okay, I want to just point out that this is just the tip of an iceberg of all expressions that you can find in language that have information which we could define as logical information. And for each of them, we need studies to figure out whether they are part of an early language of thought or not. Okay, let me focus on this issue of possible, and I'm giving you some data about how we go about to find out if infants can have notion of alternative possibilities. This is work by Rezo and Sadendorf, which is quite interesting, and he tried to ask kids to get the ball coming out from the tube, and if you really want to get these balls, the best way to do it is to put both hands at the end of this U-shaped tube. But in fact, Kids don't do it, and primates don't do it too. Here, success is this blue color, and you can see that these are great apes, 2-year-olds, and the only group that can be claimed to succeed is a 4-year-old group. Before, they just put one hand and miss 50% of the balls, okay? There are data that have been given by the group of Susan Curry that use a different paradigm. They seem to go to the same conclusion, namely that the notion of representative alternative possibilities is not there very early on. In fact, it's a late notion, okay? We don't very much like this story, so this is the way we try to do it. We present infants, these are 12 and 19 months old infants, with this, can I reduce it? This kind of situation, repeatedly, not so many times. And then, of course, there is this moment in which the same object doesn't come out from the expected side, and our measure is, sorry, what happens in this 1 second and a half moment in which kids have to just represent another possibility? If they have the two alternatives possible, we should expect them to go towards this direction to find where the tube will reveal the object. If they are lost because they cannot represent more than one possibility, and they should be just surprised and non-reactive. We also stick in several cases, a situation that has several alternatives and situation that they've never seen before to figure out if they can actually... Okay, my contribution to this work has been to find the bird song, so that's why I was fond of showing it. Okay, now, these are adults, these are 12 months old, we are still working on that, and 17 months old. And what you can see here is anticipation at the final outcome in the moment in which they see the short exit, let's put it away, and transfer to the test case in which the short exit, there is nothing that comes out. And you can see that adults are essentially at ceiling, but infants actually struggle to complete the anticipation. However, this can be explained in many ways. In this kind of experiment, kids have to overcome perseveration tendencies. So what we did, this is a way to represent the data, we just plot the absolute displacement from the center where the object comes out from here, or when the object has to come out on the other side. And you can see that both at 12 months and at 17 months, when kids don't find the object here, they tend to go on the other side, although they don't quite anticipate the exit. And they do it also in cases in which there are several alternatives which are available. This to us suggests that maybe kids can represent possibility way earlier than what it was projected by this work of this very interesting and intelligent psychologist that I mentioned before. Okay. There is also another explanation of this result, which is really everything happens at the level of the physical module, to use Lise Pelke's terminology. And so there is no inference, there is no logical representation, simply kids look for tracking objects. And the way to, we have different ways in which are trying to address these other possibilities. And one of that is to ask whether kids do these inferences on categories. And to do that, we did this kind of situation. Whoops. There it is. Sorry about that. It looks like this doesn't seem to be willing to go. Okay. So basically here we have, okay, because there is an initial pause. So you see these objects, the objects go away, and then you feel sounds which are associated to these objects. And then objects are, you know, you cannot know where they are because they mix behind an occluder. And now there is a moment in which an object comes out, and you can know now that this is the snake because it makes the snake object. And now, crucially, in this moment, this object goes away and new objects come. So if you really track those objects, you should fail to do this task. But if you understand that birds are in the triangle box, and snakes are in the heart box, then you should be able to make this inference. And what we do is the same thing as before. We look at this particular moment in which you can make an inference, and we find, again, the same kind of pupil reaction that suggests that there is processing just in this moment. And in the moment of the prediction, right before the hands go down, we check whether infants actually move their eyes in one particular case. And the answer is, up to 18 months old, yes, they tend to just anticipate on the basis of an inference. And this suggests that kids don't really use the physical module by itself to do this inference. They probably use a real reasoning, as I have described it, as a language of thought kind of person would describe it. Okay, this kind of inference has been found in several other contexts by other people, about agent intention, references on other world. We show that this is being used by 90-month-old infants to nail down the meaning of a word which is presented. When social and physical knowledge have to be integrated, so it doesn't seem to be modular in the sense that we are used to. And it applies to types and not tokens, so it's not a question that you can solve only by using one single case. Okay. Now, there is much more, as I was saying to you before, a lot of more. My time is over, and I don't want to continue on what is more. We are trying to figure out situations in which certain kind of things that you find in semantics, like operators, explain a kind of conclusion without using language at all. Therefore, seems to be operators that are at the level of thought as opposed to being at the level of processing language. And there is a general tendency that is being used in linguistics to just push down things that you cannot explain at the level of pragmatics. And what I want to suggest, and I just stop here, and I can argue more if you are interested, is that many of the phenomena that are described as conversational, that are described as social, and so on, are based on certain properties of language of thought. Remember that I recall before that infants also have an ability of representing their own state of knowledge. What does this mean? That there is potentially a language of thought, but also a meta-language of thought. And this leaves it open the extent to which we need to find computational mechanisms that generate infants and adults' abilities to gather knowledge. There are things like, for example, just to tell you something crazy, metaphors or irony or humor that are supposed to be completely dependent on interactions, understanding a natural language. But why so? Wouldn't it be possible? Of course, if I say to you, you are the apple of my eye, this is dependent on what you know about language, but also apple is dependent on language. Why not thinking that the level of language of thought, the level of concepts, you can also use metaphors as internal states in which you use one concept for another? Or can we be ironical about our own state? Yes, we can. We don't need that irony be a public thing about language. Can we laugh about our own state of mind? I laugh about what I was thinking about the brain before knowing Stan, for example. No, all of these kind of domains that are generally associated to language acquisition and social states may be based on mental representation that have to do with certain little language inside the mind. And so that's where I stop. There is a lot more to be studied, and I want to thank Stan for having opened, as he did for so many times, like very simple idea, very rich, the possibility to experimentally study languages of thought.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.